November 6th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Today, of course, is Election Day. So I hope that everybody went out and voted for their favorite candidates based on all those commercials.
Well, I saw that Weird Al was tweeting just a week ago that, that if you go and you vote, they give you free stickers.
There you go.
So you can go get a free sticker.
Is whatever gets the kids out there. That's what it's all about. Weird Al will get me to the polls for sure.
The interesting part this year is, you know, Taylor Swift, who's a person who is not known to say a lot of political things, was definitely very active on social media for the first time for her, for the state of Tennessee. I think that's where she lives. And that was definitely aimed at young people. And also, you know, Oprah Winfrey was out running. And doing door-to-door and very active in Atlanta. She said she wasn't running for president, but she felt it was important to use her celebrity to get noticed. And that's, you know, there are celebrities, and then there's Oprah Winfrey.
Who is,
and it's kind of like, and Barbara Streisand is going to show up someplace. And, you know, it's just on that next level. And so, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of emotions. A
lot of noise out there, too.
A lot of emotions. In fact, I would assume there's going to be a lot of emotions tonight, too. So let's just go forward and recognize, control what you can control.
That's it.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got to see the movie that we talked about last week that I really want to go see and hopefully we'll get a chance to this week. You saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, and you know, George Gershwin was not in this at all, Steve.
That's the wrong Rhapsody.
Yeah. That's
Rhapsody the blue one.
Oh, that's the blue one. Oh, this is about Freddie Mercury.
Yes.
And this is about Queen. Mm-hmm. And Bryan Singer had a hand in this before he was fired.
Yes, then they took his hand away.
Well, I shouldn't use the word hand either.
Probably not.
Anyway, I got in a packed theater. There was a lot of people there. A lot of families were there. So mom and dad and kids were in between.
Queen is certainly one of those generational crossovers where the parents might like them and the kids might like them just as well.
And this is this could have been very much a rated R film if they chose to go to that level.
Okay.
But Queen, as far as the bandmates who are still surviving, they wanted this to be definitely available to everyone. So they toned this down a little bit.
Okay.
While this certainly is about the band Queen, this is really a Freddie Mercury picture. The people I'm sitting with around, they're all very happy about this film. I found this film very choppy, though. And what I mean by that is, everything was like, and this is where we recorded Bohemian Rhapsody, and this is where Another One Bites the Dust came into play, and this is, and we kind of just like go from shot to shot. I found it kind of just not a good storytelling technique. Very comic book each, but not a skilled comic book. I'm talking about just a poor, you know, regular 60s comic book like way.
Blocky ideas. Here's an idea, and then we're going to skip to another idea. We've talked about this with other biographies. If you give me a great story, a beginning, middle, and end, not a chronology, I'm going to appreciate it much more.
Now, Queen definitely had a very unique sound, and also had a band that was certainly had other opportunities if they had never made it as a band. So, you know, we had an astrophysicist there. We had a dentist as one of the bandmates. And then we had a guy who said he'd be an electrician. And, of course, we have Freddie Mercury, who basically we learned started off working as a baggage man over at Heathrow Airport. And we learned a little bit about his mouth. One of the I listened to a theory a friend of mine was telling me about, that big mouths make big voices. And she goes, well, make sure when you look at singers and the really, really good ones, look at their mouths because they're huge.
Not like Steven Tyler. Oh, wait. Steven Tyler's mouth is enormous.
Or Mick Jagger. Or, you know, any of the you know, great singers.
Right.
Typically, they have great big mouths, and that's where you get those great big beautiful voices from. Well, we've learned that Freddie Mercury had four extra incisors. That's the reason why his mouth pushed out the way he did.
Interesting. That's in this movie?
Yes.
Huh.
So they definitely address it, because the actor playing Freddie Mercury had to get special teeth to basically push his mouth out some.
Really?
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking of like Bowser from Sha Na Na. He had a huge mouth.
Exactly.
Wow. Interesting.
This is also a story. I kept thinking about George Michael in this, mm-hmm. and I also kept thinking about people I knew growing up who were homosexual, about the challenges they have at kind of coming to terms with their sexuality. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're very young, he ended up getting married, I would say very young. I don't know what his age was, 18, 19, 20, 21. He went on tour and, you know, he discovered, you know, who he really is. And he had a very difficult time coming to terms with it. In fact, he had a very difficult time letting his wife go and letting her move on. And we got a little bit of, you know, what I would say as some of the dark side of the homosexual lifestyle, and being a person who is trying to come to terms with that. He definitely was a partier. This is Freddie Mercury. So his bandmates were, when I say regular guys, they certainly were family guys, and you know they would get to this wild party that Freddie Mercury's throwing. They would stay for a while, have a drink with him, stuff like that, and they would say, okay, and now we're going home. Well, Freddie Mercury didn't have that, his lifestyle that he was working on and who he wanted to be just sort of put him in situations where there was drugs and alcohol available, and
was also the time, the late 70s and early 80s was cocaine fueled.
Sure. Now Queen has a great sound. I mean, it's a very distinctive sound. Sort of like the Doors have a distinctive sound, the Beatles have a distinctive sound, the Rolling Stones or Led Zeppelin. You name a band, you know, Judas Priest, whoever your band is.
Blues Traveler.
They all have a sound.
Definitely.
And Queen had a sound, and it very much was inspired by Freddie Mercury's voice. Mm-hmm. And obviously this guitaring playing that was very distinctive for this. What I will say is that my youth, when I sort of became aware of music and was exploring sounds, I wanted something definitely from that was reflecting my generation. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was rebelling against this overproduced sort of theatrical rock that Queen was part of. Certainly not like Yes and Genesis, the art rock. Certainly against these great big albums with these well-produced stuff. What did we get as the response to that? Well, we start getting bands like Clash and Talking Heads and you know, Freddie Mercury's in this jumpsuit and Talking Heads shows up with polo shirts and blue jeans. Mm-hmm. So definitely we had a response to it that stripped down the music quite a bit. I didn't think the music was speaking to me like it should in this movie.
Which really, it seems like that should be the highlight of this, is you get to see these people pretending to be Queen and performing this
sure.
music, this amazing performance at Live Aid.
And I like Queen's music. It starts off at Live Aid, the movie starts off, it ends at Live Aid. So, you know, in between we get the story of Queen. I'm very mixed on this. I'm going to say 60 out of 100.
Okay.
Which doesn't sound very good. I don't think this is a bad film. It certainly is family with some adult issues going on okay. there because there's drug use.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I don't think this is anything unique and special.
Okay.
And that's unfortunate mm-hmm. because Freddie Mercury and the band Queen is unique and special.
Mm-hmm. So did you get a feeling from the rest of the audience in the room with you that they enjoyed this?
Of course. This is one of those. This is the last time I felt this way was going to see Black Panther.
Oh.
Where everyone was very excited to be there, and it just seemed like a whole bunch of people who maybe they don't go to the movie all the time.
Okay.
But they sought out to go to this movie because it was unique and special.
There you go.
And Freddie Mercury and Queen has that sort of resonance that with the population. So good job as far as doing this, but certainly nothing unique and special.
I got to see a comedy special on Netflix. We've talked for months now how Netflix is the comedy place now. If you want to go see stand-up comedy, yes, you can go to your local comedy club.
Sure.
But you don't go to Comedy Central on cable anymore. You go to Netflix. They're the ones that are putting on the comedy specials. I watched all the way through. I didn't stop. Adam Sandler 100% fresh.
Now, do we say I'm sorry? Now, Adam Sandler, what we always say, he's a charming guy who has good material that
sort of
that is. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say he's a charming guy that has material.
A lot of people really, really enjoy Adam Sandler's comedy.
Because they like Adam Sandler. He's a joyful, fun guy.
And that's it. That's what this is. This is a really fun look at what Adam Sandler can do on stage. It is distracting to me that they edited together like 6 or 7 different performances to make this comedy special. He's got...
So what you're saying is that every time you turn around, he's dressed differently.
Like... In the middle of sentences, it will switch to one of the other venues where he was telling that same joke. He's got different clothing on. The microphones are different. The sound is different. The acoustics are different. It was very distracting to me, all of the different venues that we were looking at in this. I don't know why they did that, just to show that he went to all of these places.
Was Sandler ever a stand-up comedian?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was.
Yeah,
okay.
He had quite a few comedy albums.
Okay.
You know, back in the day of comedy albums, he was a stand-up comedian, and he...
We do call those comedy recordings now, Steve.
Well, people don't listen to albums anymore, Chip. No. I don't know if you know that, but...
Well, yes, they do. It's retro, baby.
Right. Adam Sandler has his little guitar, and he plays. He's a pretty good musician, really, when it comes down to it. He's got his funny little songs that always have this rocking melody, and he's telling you all about this wonderful thing, and then the whole story flips on its head, and... the music stops.
Okay.
That's the joke. Is he got these funny little songs that you say something unexpected and stop the music.
Okay.
Except for the one really touching song. The second to last song in this set is a really beautiful tribute to Chris Farley.
And Chris Farley and Adam Sandler. Chris Farley is a former Saturday Night Live performer.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very loved.
They came up together in Saturday Night Live. And yes, beloved is the right word for Chris Farley. And this song is touching. It's real. It's genuine. And really good musically as well.
Mm-hmm.
And stick around for that at the end if you can't get through the baby talk and the really inappropriate jokes that he sticks in the middle of these family-oriented jokes. That's the one thing we talk about with Adam Sandler all the time.
Hey, it's a family event, and then there's not the family
part. And then there's this part that you don't want the kids to look at. Oh, good. Right in the middle of the thing that I want the kids to look at. Great. I also got a chance because I subscribed to Stars this week for Outlander. I looked through the Stars catalog and I found that they have They Live from 1988.
Oh boy. I never watched
you
this.
You never watched this.
But
in
I'm reading the notes and the first thing I see is Steve, before The Rock, was there another wrestler who was going to try to make it?
Well, Hulk Hogan had a pretty good acting career after his wrestling career.
Steve, I'm not talking about Hulk Hogan, Steve.
Oh, the other guy. This is Rowdy Roddy Piper, who unfortunately has passed away since. But Roddy Piper was an actor trying to make it in Hollywood. And They Live, John Carpenter's... not exactly science fiction and not exactly horror tale, was the vehicle that Roddy Piper was trying to become the next guy up.
So tell me, what is They Live about?
Well, it's kind of important to think about today in this day and age, how we look at media and how media expressions change our way of thinking. They Live is a story from 1988. It actually premiered on November 4th, 1988. So this is the 30th anniversary of it. And in this movie, this drifter discovers that maybe the media is being run by a secret alien society, and they've been telling us one thing and meaning something completely different for a very long time.
So Steve, is this your love of InfoWars seems to be reflected here, right?
This is the conspiracy theory. This is the idea of we don't know who's in charge, and they are not us. And this is right. This is not a new idea. This is something that we've done for a long time. This is very much a Twilight Zone episode.
It sounds very much maybe Matrixy, like the Matrix.
Yeah, there is certainly an awakening moment in this where it is very much like the Matrix, and our main character makes a decision to fight this evil that he sees now that his eyes are open.
All right, so John Carpenter, the gentleman who was in charge of Halloween, mm-hmm. the movie, he had a part to play in this. He was the director or writer yep. of this. Tell me a little bit about this. Was this a good expression? Is this a good movie?
This is... Okay, so let me preface my answer okay. with there's
an asterisk right beside him.
I remember this movie from 30 years ago as being a lot better than I experienced watching it again this year. Okay. My memory of this is an action thriller with dire consequences for a large swath of humanity. This is not really that great a film. This is a much more independent sort of film. Okay. John Carpenter was a very minimalist kind of director, and this is a very minimalist kind of film, including the 10-minute wrestling match in the middle, where Roddy Piper and Keith David do all of Roddy Piper's wrestling moves, suplex and all, and 10 minutes of this film is wrestling.
Well, there you go, Steve. Sounds like the skill set was used to full advantage.
Yeah, I think John Carpenter made better movies after this. This is 10 years after Halloween, and I think John Carpenter still wasn't quite at the skill level that we honor him as a filmmaker in this one. This is a fun movie, but those of you who remember it from 30 years ago, don't revisit it. It's better in your memory.
It's better to go back and look at Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, that's still a good movie.
Even the first one.
Only the first one. Even though those tropes have been used in so many films since then, they make them look quaint in that movie. At the time, The Matrix was bringing up new things. Probably everybody's favorite meme from this, the one that everybody still talks about, is I've come here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum. That is the line from this movie that sticks with us, and we use that on the internet all the time. Opening this week, maybe there's some classics that'll be wonderful 30 years from now. The first one is Dr. Seuss's The Grinch, another version of The Grinch story.
Well, Steve, it looks like they started advertising this last November, maybe. Uh-huh.
Animated films, because they worked on for so long, they start advertising them really early, and maybe that doesn't bode well for this.
Yes, I'm telling you, I don't have young people mm-hmm. in my house. I've got teenagers. This does not look particularly good to me, but then again, I'm not a young person, so this may appeal to them.
Did you see all the Minion films and the Despicable Me films where the very childish action adventure was happening?
I did see the Despicable Me mm-hmm. Series, and I did find it funny.
Okay,
I'm sure this will be capable, mm-hmm. but it seems not in the spirit of Dr. Seuss.
So I'll agree with that.
And in fact, even the Chuck Jones cartoon from the 60s. You know, you've got this great voice who's playing.
Boris Karloff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this one seems to not have that same presence.
It's got all those stars in it, though. This is an all-star cast. The voice work of so many people went into this.
So when we go to, I think it was Ron Howard who worked with Jim Carrey to do the
live version. Mm-hmm.
And what we got from that is Faith Hill singing Where Are You Christmas, which okay. was a great song. I don't think that was particularly memorable.
Okay.
We'll see.
We'll see on that one. There is a new dragon tattoo story. The Girl in the Spider's Web is opening this week.
Now, this does have interest to me. Did you ever see the movie read the book?
I read the first book, and it was so dark and so torturous. And this girl goes through such hell in that first book that I was not entertained by it at all.
Now, I think there was two versions of that movie.
Wow.
And I got to see one of them, and mm-hmm. I really liked it.
Okay.
Now, you're right. There's a very dark part to it. But this is like they've created two of these super soldiers, mm-hmm. and Yin and Yang are going to go after each other. So the two sisters.
Okay.
And anyway, this looks pretty good. If I'm going to the movie this week, this is something I would see.
Really? I am not interested in seeing that one. There is a political movie opening this week, just in time for Election Day. It is The Front Runner.
This movie is another movie I have interest in seeing.
Really?
Well, I lived in D.C. during this time. So this is about Gary Hart, about his run for president. He was the Democratic he was a front runner in 1988. So if we think about back about that time, Reagan had just finished his second term. We were having the first Bush, who's going to be running for president, who was the vice president under...
And he didn't quite have the charisma of a Ronald Reagan.
And so what their thought was that a younger person could come in and do this. You know, if we think about 92, that was when the first Clinton bill.
President Clinton.
President Clinton.
Sorry.
As we like to call Hillary. It's Hillary Clinton and President Clinton, right?
Sorry.
Anyway, so Gary Hart was that young guy that was the Bill Clinton of its time, who ran into a scandal because he had an
affair.
Because
he was the Bill Clinton of his time?
Well, he had an affair.
Uh-huh.
And we got tabloids and basically newspapers became tabloids at that time. We like a good sex scandal and we're not willing to forgive it, right?
That's right. This is 1988. This is the same year that They Live came out. So there's a 30-year gap between this story and now. I'm not sure why this movie is important. I don't know why the Gary Hart presidential campaign is something that's historic.
He was just a young charisma guy. He really did have a chance of winning, although Reagan was very, very popular. And, the first Bush had some background stuff that definitely could have been exploited. And, you know, when you're running for president, you know, it's about building coalitions. Hart had charisma. And they were looking at him probably like they looked at John F. Kennedy back in the 60s. This, of course, stars Wolverine.
Yes. And Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart.
He's all
jacked
up.
Those are words that I don't think I was ever going to say before we read this.
Well, you know, he's not singing in this.
Right.
So and so he's not a P.T. Barnum.
Right. You got J.K. Simmons being the hard-nosed drum teacher. No, sorry, he's not the drum teacher in this. But the trailer features some really good drumming whenever J.K. Simmons is on the screen. Did you notice that? This is directed by Jason Reitman, Ivan Reitman's son. He directed Juno and Tully. So okay. we know some of his style. And this might be a great film.
This looks of interest to me.
There is a very small independent film called Les Bomb. This is about a young woman who is bringing her girlfriend home for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving movies are on.
That's right. Steve. It's a thing.
Here we go. The Thanksgiving movies are coming. And this is all a silly comedy because her male roommate shows up and starts telling lies instead of the plan that she had to reveal herself to her family.
Well, the idea is that she is a lesbian and she's got a girlfriend and they're both there. And will everybody find out? Will we be able to reveal this? This is very interesting in the sense that I just got to see Bohemian Rhapsody and all the challenges that that Freddie Mercury was having with his sexuality. You know, it plays out in this comedy here. So
in a different way, because we're in a very different era from the 80s.
And if you think about the movie that was released last week or the week before about the young men's, the church basically sending to be deprogrammed.
Right.
We're getting a lot of movies that are touching on this type of subject material.
Yep.
Anyway, this is coming out. We have a World War II D-Day movie that's coming out, Steve.
Veterans Day is coming up.
Exactly. Just in time.
For Veterans Day. Overlord is the name of this movie. It is another one of those stories. It might be fantastic, but we've seen this.
Steve, I don't know who this is appealing to. Yeah. I just remember sitting down watching Saving Private Ryan, and the place was packed, and the tears running down these gentlemen who are older gentlemen who were there, running down their face. That was 10, 15 years ago when that happened. Maybe even more than that.
Maybe there's another story that hasn't been told.
I don't know. But anyway, this is just a story.
There you go. And there's interesting movie called River Runs Red. This is the story of a successful judge, played by Taye Diggs, who has a son who is killed by two white police officers. That sounds like ripped from the headlines. And he goes to hardened detective John Cusack to go solve this problem. John Cusack goes to hardened George Lopez, and they team up And then it takes a really dark twist.
This is a really strange film. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have the whole time you're watching the trailer, you're going, okay, this is a story about a young black man who was shot and killed,
right,
in a car, mm-hmm. and we're going to get a story about it.
Sounds like something that we talk about all the time on the news.
So Taye Diggs shows up to talk to George Lopez, who also had a son that went through a similar situation. Mm-hmm. So we've got Taye Diggs is black, by the way. So a black gentleman whose son was died, and George Lopez, who's a Hispanic or a Latina, mm-hmm. Who's had a son that died similarly.
Mm-hmm. The same two cops.
Okay. Uh-huh. So then instead of like addressing this like a judge would,
right.
we get like a vigilante story.
They pick up guns and go to attack these two police officers.
What a weird turn.
What a twist this trailer takes. Go watch this trailer. I don't know that this movie is any good. I was in it. I was there. I was thinking this was a great story that was going to end really well for our society today. And then they took out guns and went to go hunt these cops. That's not okay.
Yeah, I said I don't know any judges that go, you know, it's just time to go vigilante on people.
Judge Judy is angry.
Bruce Wayne is now a, you know, judge. It just seems not the way to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. And boy, I would love to tell you that everything is flowers and cherries and it's wonderful world out there, but maybe 1952, it was a different place. I read a great book that is an alternate history science fiction book. This is called The Calculating Stars. It's part of a series called The Lady Astronaut by Mary Robinette Kowal. This story takes place in 1952, and first of all, President Dewey is talking.
Oh, okay.
Because
it's an alternate
world. It's an alternate world, and we figured that
parallel
out.
Parallel universe, Steve.
Very quickly, that Dewey defeated Truman. That sounds familiar. And in 1952, then there is a meteorite that strikes the east coast of the United States.
All right, so this is a book that was released this summer,
mm-hmm.
in 2018. So it's a brand new book. All right, so this is the beginning of a series.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the premise, as you've described it, is we have a meteor that hits basically the east coast.
Which makes it a meteorite.
Okay, meteorite. And basically is digging its way towards the center of the Earth.
And throwing all sorts of stuff into the air. This is a planet killer, just like the meteorite that killed the dinosaurs.
All right, so the Earth is dying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we going to do to help humanity, Steve?
Because humanity is basically doomed at this point. The dinosaur killer is here, and we are the dinosaurs. They come up with a plan to leave the Earth, to go and colonize the moon and potentially go on from there to colonize Mars.
So if you're a young listener or a person who is not aware of this, this is, you know, the Wright brothers were early in the century.
Right.
Then we get to like World War II era and, you know, we're dealing with like the Red Baron.
Right.
So we get to World War II and we finally get some jets. But, you know, we're still, much of the military is still running around horse and buggy.
Yeah.
So we're just at jeeps. It's the 50s, man.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're still, you know, we've got airplanes and stuff, but this is certainly not the 60s where John F. Kennedy has said, we're going to send a man to the moon.
And that happened in 1969. So we are talking about 17 years before that. They are in an emergency situation, and they have to put together a plan to get off the planet.
Well, there you go, Steve. I don't know what you do. We didn't even have rockets that could hit us to outer space at that time, I don't think.
We were really close. The development of those rockets were happening, but this really accelerated the project in this alternate history.
All right, so Earth is dying. We need rockets. Project Paperclip, we read a book about that earlier this year. So we're putting together rockets.
We need astronauts.
And, oh, tell us a little bit about that.
So, in 1952, we certainly segregated people based on physical attributes. The African Americans in the United States were certainly not the right people to do a project like this. But in this emergency situation, they came to an understanding that it doesn't matter if you are black or white. It doesn't matter if you're male or female. The best people for this mission might not fit into that cookie cutter that we had sure. in place in 1952. That's where the lady astronaut comes in. The main character is a scientist. She was a pilot during World War II.
Okay.
And she is the best qualified person to be on the mission to go into space. But everybody else has to get over their preconceptions of this dainty little woman who should be baking cookies instead of flying these very dangerous aircraft.
So the idea is that the woman who's going to be our star here.
Mm-hmm. The protagonist.
And she's going to be the person who's going to lead us to our new colony on the moon.
Uh-huh. All eventually.
Right. Eventually.
It takes the entire book to get her actually in a rocket to get toward the goal of getting to the moon.
And, you know, think back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. First of all, we haven't been to the moon. Right. We don't really know what's up there. But it's desolate. We need water. We need food. Mm-hmm. We need oxygen. We need a place to live. We need to get people up there. I mean, just you can imagine all the challenges.
And they put a big timer on it because the Earth is not going to sustain life for much longer. They have a very short amount of time to get this done. This is a really good action adventure story about learning to honor people for their knowledge, learning about how to work with people, even with those preconceived notions of sexism and racism of the 1950s.
Sure.
Learning to go past that and to save humanity doing whatever it takes.
This sounds like an interesting premise, almost Battlestar Galactica-like.
Yes, this is so much like this situation in Battlestar Galactica, where they were on the run, they had no choice, they had to work together, they had to find a way to survive.
And Lauren Green was a very young guy during this
very young Lauren Green features prominently in this. No, he doesn't actually. But who does feature prominently is a very young Martin Luther King Jr.
Really?
This is 1952, where Martin Luther King Jr. was doing his work and was saying his words. Who else is in this? Well, the computers from the Hidden Figures story figure into this very prominently. They are very capable, very smart black women who are doing this work to get this science put together.
So Martin Luther King had a different type of dream at that point.
Uh-huh.
It was like, hey, I have a dream that
can I get on the ship with you guys?
That all people can make their way to the moon, and we find plenty of water, and we find plenty mm-hmm. of ways of growing food.
This is a great story. Wonderful characters. I really recommend this to everybody. I do also recommend the audiobook version of this, because
okay.
the author herself reads the audiobook. She has been studying radio, and she has degrees in performance. She does a fantastic job with all of the voices, all the characters in this
really?
Book, and she is one of the best narrators I've listened to in audiobooks for a long time.
Better than Stephen King, Steve?
Stephen King certainly lends his own voice to this, but she is
doing
12 different voices
and
doing them very well. Maybe we should contact her. Maybe we should see if we can get an interview on the show, because I would love to talk to her about all she's done both in writing and with her audio work.
All right.
It's called The Calculating Stars, a lady astronaut novel by Mary Robinette Kowal. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
I got bad news, Chip. Christmas is canceled.
Well, that's awful news, Steve. Especially
yeah,
with Christmas music's getting ready to start. Anyway, it's being played right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, everyone. Christmas has been canceled. There are reports out there, and I can't believe it, but apparently there is no new Doctor Who episode on Christmas Day this Christmas. So cancel all of your plans.
All right. So Steve is saying that his Christmas is canceled.
Well, I'll still watch Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Oh, so
but just not Doctor Who.
Oh, well, there you go, Steve.
So
well, I'm sorry. They usually have, I should say, history has shown
mm-hmm.
that on Christmas Day there is a new Doctor Who.
Each of the last 13 years since the return of Doctor Who in 2005.
Wow.
This will be
That's
the first
very interesting
time.
That they would break that tradition.
It seems interesting that they would announce it this week, too. Like, didn't they know this before this week? It leads me to a question. I wonder, is this just a clever marketing scheme?
I don't know, Steve.
What would it take for me to be really excited about a lost episode of Doctor Who that we could then recover? Oh, wait. There are plenty of lost episodes of Doctor Who that when we recover them, we have parties. So I don't know what to think about this.
All right. So you're thinking that potentially they could have an announcement coming up that was, oh, we found something unique.
That maybe the Doctor will save us from no Christmas with Doctor Who.
So if you're a new listener, you should just go ahead and just mark this down.
Mm-hmm.
For Thanksgiving, Steve watches Mr. Science Theater the entire day.
Yeah, that's called Turkey Day.
Okay.
It's called Turkey Day. We watch bad movies. That's what we do on Turkey Day.
And for Christmas, Steve watches the original trilogy.
The three Star Wars movies, yes.
And he watches Doctor
and
Who.
And Doctor Who. That's Merry Christmas.
The rest of us have other plans, but Steve, his plans are set in stone.
That's right. It's my holiday. I can watch whatever I want. I don't know what to think of this. I don't know what's going to happen. It'll be interesting.
Steve, you got some great news for us.
I got some purple news.
Some purple. Well, there you go.
I got some purple news. The Timberwolves, the basketball team in Minneapolis, they have cool new purple uniforms.
All right. So let me just describe this. Nike is the uniform provider for the NBA.
Okay.
And they released a whole bunch of new specialty NBA uniforms. The one for the Chicago Bulls features, it's got the stripe. It's got the,
like the Chicago flag.
Yeah, with the four stars,
the
red stars.
The Chicago flag. It's a great flag.
Their uniform looks tight,
nice.
As far as their special uniform. But Minneapolis, the Minnesota Timberwolves,
mm-hmm.
Well, they decided they were going to do, or I'm sorry, the designer decided they were going to make it Prince-inspired.
Nice.
So they're using the font very similar to Purple Rain.
Okay.
And they're purple, of course,
yeah.
Which is not Minneapolis's normal colors.
Really?
First of all, the first thing you think of when you think of basketball...
and Prince.
I was going to say basketball and Minneapolis.
Uh-huh.
You think of Prince
uh-huh.
and Charlie Murphy's
and
story.
Charlie Murphy's story. We talk about this all the time. Those of you who have no idea what Charlie Murphy had to say about Prince and basketball, you really need to go to our show notes. We'll put that story in there. This is just the mind races with this story.
All right, so Charlie Murphy and Prince are no longer with us. So we'll be looking down from heaven.
Mm-hmm. Smiling.
And Charlie Murphy's story was that he's Eddie Murphy's brother.
Uh-huh.
They went to a party they went to a club and they were invited back to a party at Prince's house.
Okay.
Prince, this is 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, decides he's going to ask everybody if they'd like to play basketball.
Sure, of course.
And they decide they're going to go play basketball.
Uh-huh.
Well, they got everybody gym clothes except for Prince of the Revolution, who played in their
stage
uniforms,
clothes.
Yes. And the joke was blouses versus shirts. Prince, he did not recognize us, realized this at the time, has a background playing basketball
uh-huh.
and just absolutely tore them up playing basketball.
Uh-huh.
After the basketball game was over,
yes.
Prince offered to make them pancakes for breakfast. So it's 5 or 6 in the morning. And so... Prince is making pancakes for Charlie Murphy and his friends.
It's a ridiculous story. And we know this because this story was told on the Chappelle show.
Yes.
And Dave Chappelle acted this out on the show. And a photo of him dressed as Prince then became the cover for a Prince album because Prince used it.
Yeah, a couple years later, Prince came out with a song called Breakfast Can Wait and used the Dave Chappelle dressed as Prince picture
holding pancakes
as the cover of it.
Oh my goodness.
Chappelle ends up going on to Tonight's Show and he talks a little bit about this and he goes, what I first learned is, first of all, don't mess with Prince
uh-huh.
because Prince will come back. He goes, well, what am I going to do? Sue him for a picture of me dressed as him serving pancakes?
Right.
He goes, check and mate there. There you go. So this is a fun. Well, special uniforms for holidays and games are always fun.
Yeah,
but
and they sell really well.
But Minneapolis having Prince-inspired uniforms for their NBA team seems like it just brings back a lot of great memories,
especially on Pancake Day when you go in to watch the basketball game and they serve you pancakes.
Oh my God! In fact, that would even be better if it was if they use these uniforms again. Say, right, Fat Tuesday, basically Pancake Day.
This is a great story. If you've never seen that Chappelle show again, go to our show notes. I'll put it in there. And it is just a hilarious concept to think about those people sitting around doing those things. It's just so funny. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week and bring syrup.
Yeah, we got to get started getting ready for Thanksgiving, right?
That's right.
Turkey Day. We got some stuff to talk about. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening. Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenblum.
We'll see you in the future. I just wanna-